Good evening, dear ones. What a great blessing it is to look out and see each of you present here this evening. We come together with our shared intention, and it's a great joy to do so. So let us join in holy remembering that there is light divine, there are realms of being, and there are grace and mercy for each of us to be uplifted and fulfill the destiny that is ours. So we begin in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. So tonight's opening remembrance is a story of extraordinary valuation and great personal sacrifice that directly accrues to us. We've been talking about the lines of work and most recently the third line of work. And so we have profound examples in the lives of Catherine and Maurice Nicol. So I'd like to tell the story again this year when we think back. Here we are in the summer, June 2023. Maurice Nicol in June 1940 was just beginning to write the commentaries. His groups had been meeting in London for a number of years in the 1930s, among the worsening conditions that existed there with the conflicts on the horizon in Europe. In June 1940, England, 9 months earlier, had already declared war on Germany, and the times there were very tense. The Nicols lived on a farm, and on the weekends, people would come from the cities and stay with them. And they conducted watches at night, not knowing if they would be bombed at any time. So they organized themselves and accommodations were made for all of these people that continued to come and they continued to study the work. And yet during his writing of the commentaries, Maurice Nicol never mentioned their own hardship and the changes they were going through. That summer, their daughter got married, even amidst upon all of that turmoil that existed. And shortly thereafter the wedding, they received a notice that they had to vacate the farm within 24 hours because it was being taken over by the military. So they had 24 hours to find a new place to live, to pack whatever they could, and to move. It is said that the Nicols discussed this and told their group and all the people that were staying with them that this was indicative of the work, that we are not to get too attached to any place, to any scheme, to any way of being, but at the same time, we were to build an ark that was a container for the work. And that ark was ourselves and was a symbol of a way to preserve what is essential in life and to preserve this precious knowledge so that it can navigate through and beyond the dark times. So as we wonder perhaps about our own times that we're living in, we can think back and know that the work survives and it goes forward. And we are deeply grateful, as we had been invited to do, gratitude for the past, generosity for the future. And we honor Catherine and Maurice Nicol by their own work, and we celebrate their lives. Little did they know that their work would accrue to us as an organization that is also worldwide at this point. So we now prepare ourselves to honor their work, to honor the work and our own work in one another by becoming present to this time. To do so quietly, to look within our own heart and to hear what it is for us to hear at this time. To let go of our own fears and small anxieties and to risk. We know that this matters for our very selves, for one another and the container that we are creating, and for the world. So we place ourselves with intention and trust and receptivity to the influences that are coming from the circle of conscious humanity, both in this realm and in others. And we prepare to be awake to them, to ask to consciously receive them. With back upright, heart open, mind quiet, in directed attention, body relaxed, noticing perhaps and then releasing all tension, all constriction, all resistance. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy. All affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God, as we ourselves are beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So now we share our Lexio reading and image and prepare to read it, to receive it as it is read three times. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. feed my lambs. A different kind of love, connected with a gradual perfecting and awakening, an ascent and integration into higher realms of being. As we catch this rope of which the work speaks and hold on to it, we no longer have to prove ourselves in life, to satisfy our fear, to keep up our reputation, because we begin to obey something quite different. And this keeps something eternally young in us, because we all have in us something that can always remain young and alive. But this means that we turn in another direction for our nourishment, and passing through the doorway called self-observation, we begin to find what it is we really want and what we can really get. After a time, we begin to catch glimpses of what this love means of which John speaks. Conscious love. Because as we cease to play with ourselves and invent ourselves, so do we cease to play with and invent others. And instead of trying to meet others and get to know them from the outside inwards, we begin to feel and know them from inside outwards. When we realize this point of inner experience, we begin to understand what conscious love is, however dimly. We come to this point by inner choice. In all ages, very many have reached this point, and they communicate their strength to us. Let us hope that we ourselves reach this point. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my lambs. A different kind of love, connected with a gradual perfecting, an awakening, an ascent and integration with higher realms of being. As we catch this rope of which the work speaks and hold on to it, we no longer have to prove ourselves in life, to satisfy our fear, to keep up our reputation, because we begin to obey something quite different. And this keeps something eternally young in us, because we all have in us something that can always remain young and alive. But this means that we turn in another direction for our nourishment. And passing through the doorway called self-observation, we begin to find what it is we really want and what we can really get. After a time, we begin to catch glimpses of what this love means, of which John speaks, conscious love. Because as we cease to play with ourselves and invent ourselves, so do we cease to play with and invent others. And instead of trying to meet others and get to know them from the outside inwards, we begin to feel and know them from inside outwards. When we realize this point of inner experience, we began to understand what conscious love is, however dimly. We come to this point by inner choice. In all ages, very many have reached this point, and they communicate their strength to us. Let us hope that we ourselves reach this point. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my lambs. A different kind of love, connected with a gradual perfecting and awakening and ascent and integration with higher realms of being. As we catch this rope of which the work speaks and hold onto it, we no longer have to prove ourselves in life to satisfy our fear, to keep up our reputation, because we begin to obey something quite different. And this keeps something eternally young in us, because we all have in us something that can always remain young and alive. But this means that we turn in another direction for our nourishment, and passing through the doorway called self-observation, we begin to find what it is we really want and what we can really get. After a time, we begin to catch glimpses of what this love means, of which John speaks, conscious love. Because as we cease to play with ourselves and invent ourselves, so do we cease to play with and invent others. And instead of trying to meet others and get to know them from the outside inwards, we begin to feel and know them from outside, from inside outwards. When we realize this point of inner experience, we began to understand what conscious love is, however dimly. We come to this point by inner choice. In all ages, very many have reached this point, and they communicate their strength to us. Let us hope that we ourselves reach this point. Amen. You're invited now to share with us what you received from this passage, the image, the thoughts of your hearts. Don Hale, good evening. You're still muted, Don. You'll have to unmute. There you go.
Thank you. Good evening, Marianne, and everyone. as I was listening to you beautifully read this piece and taking it in, so many different kinds of questions came in every single phrase. And the main one was, what is the food for the lambs? And I realized the very next line was, and so, and then Peter says, yes, so I can love God. If I love God and he says, feed my lambs, then that means my love for God or for Christ is feeding the lambs. And the very next line is a different kind of love. And that is the food. So my wish is at the very end of the reading is to reach that point, because I know I'm being fed that love now. Right this very second, I can feel the love being fed to me. And my wish is to reach that point when I can finally start feeding others as well. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Amen, Don. Thank you. Howard, good evening.
Good evening, everyone. And there was a couple things that spoke to me out of that reading was, and the image I really liked too, but the obeying something different really spoke to me. And the part that spoke to me from that was ceasing to invent myself. And what came up for me from that was imaginary I. And so that's what my wish is from this, is that being fully into obeying something different, you know, and that's the higher emotional, higher intellectual centers and above. And so that is my wish, really. And quit playing, you know, to quit imagining to be. So
may it be so. Thank you, Howard. Thank you. Jim Motes, good evening.
Good evening, Mary Ann, and everyone else. Good to be with you all tonight. The other night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up in a state of anxiety. The remembrances of a few people in my life that I had lost touch with. And the anxiety was, oh my gosh, I wonder what they think of me now. And that anxiety was gripping. And yet at the same time, underneath that was the realization that this is just part of my humanity. And so I stayed with it. I just stayed with it and stayed with it and stayed with it, knowing that the part of me that knew that this could become food existed with that anxious state that was in me. And little by little, I came to the realization that this was my ego resisting, that my ego did not want to become less. And this was the spirit loving me, drawing me deeper into the freedom to be able to see this anxious state and also understand that that within me is something much greater. And so what was beautiful about this was that has fed me now for 2 days and has given me a capacity to understand the freedom that's possible. Not that I've attained it, I've tasted it, but that it's possible. And I'm holding on to that. Thank you for this reading.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. Thank you. Once you have that taste, it's always there. It's left a mark on you. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. So we'll close this part with Jim Flannery this time.
Yes, the sentence that jumped out at me, we no longer have to prove ourselves in life to satisfy our fear, to keep up our false personality, our reputation, because we begin to obey something quite different, just as our previous speaker had said, and what that, you know, I think, and I'll speak for myself, that, you know, we have a tendency to kind of to structure our life around what impresses other people, what other people expect of us, what other people want to see of us, that will to please other people. That's what I'm looking for, people pleasing. Mm-hmm. And it's very selfish. It's self-serving. But he says, obey something quite different, which is conscious love, which is not focused on the self, but is focused on consideration of others. And so that makes all the difference in, living a life that is going to make the world a better place, rather than living a life that's only going to try to make me more important. Or,
indeed.
So,
indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. And thank you to everyone as we hold what we receive in our hearts. And may they be opened with whatever it is that we received. So tonight we step into the vast realm of conscious love, and we look back upon the lines of work, and accompanying us this evening will be Deborah Hale, who I'm very pleased to introduce, and welcome, Deborah. Good evening.
Thank you, Mary Ann. I will start by sharing the homework. Hopefully. So our homework was to identify ways. Is it sharing? Just checking.
No, it isn't.
Okay. Then let me try again. All right, I think I've got it. How about now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there you go.
Great. So the homework is to identify ways in which you are making payment with gratitude and generosity to and for the work. Where are you not grateful? Where are you constricted and non-generous? Discern how you might make payment toward the future of the work, how you can contribute. How can you double down on using your gifts for others and for the work? And what role does rest play in your ability to work? Take rest in these summer months and see how rest might play into your work journey. So it looks like Leslie Vu has her hand up. Leslie, what would you like to say about the homework?
Hi. For me, the ideas of gratitude and generosity are unlocked by forgiveness. And I wasn't at the forgiveness retreat, and some people shared about it, but I found in my life that when I can forgive myself for judging myself as anything, you know, other than love, or forgive myself for judging someone else, which is usually the same thing I'm judging myself for, then the generosity comes rushing in, and the gratitude. And so I think it's just a real key for me. And I have been taking naps during the summer. It's a joy as a teacher to be off and rest during the summer.
Naps are good. Thank you, Leslie. Valerie?
Hey, Deborah, am I muted?
You're good.
Hi, okay. My connection's a little staticky, so let me know if hopefully I won't cut out. I'm gonna read most of this. So I wanna share on identifying ways in which I'm making payment with gratitude and generosity to and for the work. And when I read the sentence in the email that we were going to expand our work, working for others that we likely will never know or encounter, that really landed with me. And then the paragraph below it where Dr. Nichol, well, they said about him that he would have never known how many people would read the commentary or especially what our community is doing with it. Well, when I read that, it brought to mind the Gurdjieff movements. And that with our presence and our actions we make using our bodies and using all three centers, as we are Eucharist and we are prayer going out into the world and all creation, this made me ponder that when I first, or shortly after I arrived to CCH, I heard the word movements and it immediately grabbed me. And I asked someone, what is that? And they told me what it was. And I said, how do I get in that? How do I participate? And they said, well, you've got to meet Jack. And so I met Jack. Thank you, Jack. But my wonder is that, and my gratitude for all of you that have participated in the movements all these years that I've heard about, like the 10th Men's School, and then all of those that have gone before, I wonder if by doing and being the movements that Christ's call found me or awakened me clear in Amarillo, Texas, and helped me find the movements at CCH. And you did not know me. None of you knew me. So what if Christ is emanating, which we know that it is, from our beings to awaken others, whether they ever find or experience the movements or not, they are blessed beings by our work. And so one of the ways I wish to continue to make payment forward is to continue participating, as long as they're offered to me, the sacred dances and exercises of the movements, which are challenging and also exhilarating, as prayer and Eucharist, working in all three centers for the wish of the work ideas and the Holy Spirit to bear good fruit in our lives. And I do believe that the fruit and the efforts of everyone's work in that particular way drew me forth. I believe it did. Even though I had the call inside, it was still going out and calling and drawing me and others. And so I'm in deep gratitude for you all that went before me to help me, to draw me into this Eucharistic dance and heart of God's mind and wisdom. And thank you so much for staying with it and keeping it alive. And that's what I wish to do as well. Amen.
Thank you so much, Valerie. While you were talking, I remembered my first impressions of you years ago at Lectio Divina on Sunday mornings, and you and Lance were the people that I most enjoyed hearing sharing after the Lectio because of the Holy Spirit, how it speaks through you. So thank you. It happened again this evening. Beautiful words.
Thank you.
Looks like Bob would like to share.
Good evening. I wanted just to say, speak of my gratitude for the work. Regarding my awakening and my conscious awareness of the enormous amount of time and energy I have spent in my imaginary self, in imagination that has led me not creatively, but actually destructively and for so long. And I don't believe I would have discovered this had I not been self-observing, trying to get some distance from what I see, and not identifying from that stuff. I've been struggling with this literally for decades. I can remember in elementary school, I couldn't attend to what was being taught because I was off someplace else in my imagination. It's a wonder to me that I've gotten as much education as I have. But anyway, it's a marvelous liberation not to have to. And I'm not suggesting that I have controlled this or defeated this. It's just it's a daily kind of struggle I make, particularly in centering prayer. But I am so attuned and aware of it that it no longer drags me down into the vortex. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Bob. Looks like Jackie.
Oops, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good evening. First, second, and third lines of the work, and conscious love. And I want to congratulate Valerie, my dear friend, my beloved, who is in my journey group, who's been in journey groups that I've facilitated for the last 3 years, and who has taken great courage tonight to step up to the plate and to share. And I honor that. And I will tell her what freedom I feel that she has entered into in her life by stepping into this magical place. And on my own part, in the fourth and the fifth obligonian striving for my own work, but also on behalf of others, to recognize this is conscious love, to care enough for one another in this group, to support one another and to believe in them and to love them into development and my own development. That's the interesting aspect of this, that when we participate not only in our own development, but in others, that's when we grow. And just the amazing work that we have to do here and how grateful we have to be. But Valerie, congratulations. Beautiful share. I love you very much.
Thank you, Jackie, for your generous support of your coworker. Worker. All right, let's hear from Jim McCune. Hi, Jim. Still muted, there you go.
Did that work?
Yes.
Seems like it did. Okay. Well, I had to ask if it was working because I generally don't share on Thursday night. And I made a confession to my work group this week as we were discussing the homework that there's a place where I do not at all feel generous in terms of giving of myself to the work. And that has to do with the four-letter word of time. And I realized when I was younger and I had more energy, I also had more children, more driving to do, more drama in my life. And at that point, I was much more generous with my time towards the church and the 10th man school. Now that I'm older and retired and have none of those challenges, I'm somehow more stingy with my time. And so I'm recognizing that. And to be honest, I was driven to share tonight because in our discussion, my journey group leader, Bob, said, I think I'm going to share this week. And I said, well, Bob, if you do, I will too. And pretty soon everybody in the group was challenging each other. And I just thought, well, maybe this will be the week that all four or five of us share it once, and they're going to go, who are those people. We've never seen them before. So I turned on my camera and I put on my little headset, and I'm willing to share that I feel like I'm less than generous with time, and I wish to observe that and move past it in the future. I just did a little bit tonight. It isn't a natural thing to share here. The group setting in the church where we're looking at each other and a small group is much more my style. But anyway, I think it's the lighting there, Deborah, that it's so encouraging and safe that you have in your picture. So that made it work. Thank you.
Whatever works. Thank you for sharing, Jim. And I hope that you're observing this non-critically. Tracy.
Hello, Miss Deborah.
Hi.
Hello. Well, I just wanted to share a little bit of my own experience with second and third line. And I will confess that I was in the shallows for many, many years in the work in participation in second and third line. And there were things for sure, but the primary focus was my first line work, my relationship with God, and everything else. I wanted all of it. I wanted the spiritual journey. I wanted a family. I wanted a career. And it's only been in the last probably 3 or 4 years that has shifted. And I think Mr. Bennett said it's that learning to love something more than ourselves. And I have continued to make more meaningful efforts in this space and serving second and third line. I made a big commitment with a career change that's unfolding as we speak. And I felt a lot of joy around that, around just knowing what it is I'm being called to, how I'm supposed to serve the world. And I knew I was kind of floating across it a little bit, not really preparing myself for the difficulties. And the difficulties are starting to more clearly emerge at this stage. And I've been thrown off a little bit recently with kind of a left field second force that I was not anticipating, unrelated. And I feel like I'm there saying, I love you, Lord. I want to do this. This is what you're asking me to do. And yet it feels overwhelming, some of the challenges. And I guess I somehow imagine that serendipitously that the whole universe would be working behind the scenes to make it a little easier for me. But I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't paying attention to the life of the apostles or missionaries or even our own work lineage teachers. It's conscious labors and intentional suffering. It's putting the welfare of others first. And it's our own purification. So I'm there with Peter being asked, you know, do you love me? Yes, Lord, I love you. And once is not enough. Once is not enough. I always get tearful when I read that passage because I so much wish to love that completely, and yet I fall short. So may all of this serve the overall growth of our collective being, and may I continue to give it back to God.
Well, I hope that you will receive all the help that you need to get through this skinny spot in your life, dear friend. Let's hear from Bonnie.
Good evening, Deborah. It's good to see you and everyone. It's been a long time. I am a distant member with the community, and I have been for quite a while, have immersed myself in the work, and that has made such a difference for me. Learning from scratch, learning about how to look at others with the eyes of Christ, the mind of Christ, little bit by little bit. And it has helped me to see myself in a new way. I've felt the pull of looking at myself, taking risks in other things. I am sharing that also, that I have, within the last couple of months, had a diagnosis that shows I have a disability of focus. And I put myself out. I make myself do things for this community and for others because of my wish to serve Christ and to push myself, to take myself out of the equation and to do the work to do that. And I constantly am fighting that difficulty in making myself do these things. But the more I do it, the more I'm open to seeing others through their heart and not through their faces and their clothes and where they're at in life. And I just have much gratitude for the community and for the work. And I just wish to continue to do the work because I know I have a lot to do yet, but it will happen with God's help. And I am very much appreciative of the generosity of everyone in this community who gives of their time and their loving natures to be with us online and centering prayer. And it's my joy to serve in whatever capacity I'm asked to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. And a big amen to everything you said. I think we have Grandpa Lewis on board. Lewis?
Good evening. One aspect of the homework was to see where you're not grateful. And ever since I was a child, I've always noticed there was this ability to be joyous and thankful for a lot of things in my life. And some of it, you know, I can see where, looking back in retrospect and in observation over the years, how it's just, you know, it may have came from some of my upbringing and what have you, but, you know, my love of God has always just been the key factor where I see how important, how imperative, and the ability to see it more clearly since I started coming to CCH through the work has been just the blossoming fruit that has just been, you know, an endless giving tree. And, you know, where I don't see gratitude is when I see I'm overly identified constantly. And this one, you know, feels resentment and what have you. And that's just not a, you know, purity of heart that or a state that I want to, you know, remain in. And, but with respect to the homework, with gratitude, I see it more clearly. And the gift that's coming to me is through everybody that has participated in the work and those that I've known, that some of them have passed away, some of them have moved on, and their gratitude to me has been something that reminds me of this evening's Lectio Divina when Christ said, "Feed my lambs," you know, and to be in a community that does that without ever asking anything in return. And that for me has been an eye-opener to see where my gratitude is on a constant basis, and whether it's in my job, and I hear it from other people, you know, thank you for your generosity. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. And it's the reason I mention that is it's it may be an Enneagram thing, or, you know, I can see it on different levels through the work. Is I can see how difficult it is. It can almost be painful to accept that and be thankful. But the generosity that they've shown me, I can never forget. The payment that is there and the payment that I owe, you know, seems like I'm never able to catch up. I feel like I'm one of the lambs that is just trailing behind, and shepherds of the church have, you know, poked me along at times or just been there. And for that, I'm eternally grateful for. And so I thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. I would also like to give you one more little bit of gratitude for putting together all of the new nursery furniture and doing such a beautiful job of helping set it up. So thank you for that. Let's put you a little bit more on the spot. There are no further hands up at this time, so I'm going to assume that that means I need to get to work and start talking about conscious love. I'm going to make an effort to share the screen. Okay. Nope, I didn't do it. Marianne, I'm still seeing my sidebar. Are you seeing that as well?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah, it doesn't seem to want to go off. So I guess we'll just have a preview going tonight. Try one more time. All right, well, let's go on then. One of the things I noticed when Marianne sent me the preview of the email was that the image was the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And I had already chosen to put that into my first slide. So I was feeling very, very much like this was something that I needed to take in as an image. So I created a few slides that also are going to offer us some pictures of Sacred Heart. So as I actually, did you guys see any of those? Yes, okay. I think I've got my full screen on there.
Yes.
Okay, so when I was thinking about conscious love, I was thinking about conscious harmony and how it's consciously chosen harmony. And I was wondering if conscious love was also consciously chosen. And so that has been part of my meditation as I prepared for the class. I read three emails, and these two parables were mentioned, the parable of the pearl of great price and the Good Samaritan. And for those of you who don't know me, I am the Sunday school director, and we spend a lot of time in Godly Play talking about parables during the summer, and I have come to really love the parables deeply. I think I feel about the parables the way Valerie feels about the movements. And so it resonated with me to study these two parables. And of course, in the Good Samaritan, it asks about our neighbor, loving our neighbor as ourselves. And then there's always that question of who is my neighbor? So I went about making effort to answer that question. And my first answer is the next door neighbor on the other side of the school that I operate. And the neighbor is not happy with our school. He retired from his job a couple of years ago and didn't realize, even though we had been next door to him for so long, that there was a constant yelling and screaming, and that his peace has been destroyed. And I have really, really tried to externally consider him. And the last communication we had, he said, next time we'll talk through our lawyers. So I don't know how he's feeling about us now. And I just continue to hope and to send him love, conscious love, and to pray that we can coexist on this street in peace. So that's one of my neighbors. And then I had not met the neighbors across the street because the neighbor Eric moved out and some people moved in that I didn't know, and they have a lot of loud parties. And not too long ago, it was actually the day of the baptism, I had a chance to be called over to meet the neighbor, and the neighbor saw me as something that felt like lascivious, I guess is the word, and it was very unsettling. And after I met the neighbor, later he came knocking on the door and Don wasn't home. So I have this unsettled feeling about this neighbor across the street. But the work says, psychologically, who is my neighbor has to do with those nearest you in being. And of course, this is my beloved, Don, who is the person who is nearest to me in being and is my closest neighbor. And I will tell you a little story about the day that I was given the invitation to sign up to teach a class this month. On that particular day, the insurance adjuster had come over to the school to get up on the roof, and his ladder fell and broke off the faucet, and water was spraying everywhere, and we had to turn off the water and get a plumber out to fix it. And I had worked a 10-hour day, driven the bus, and gotten home at 5, looking forward to a desperately needed sit. And Dawn told me that I was going to be babysitting the grandchildren for about half an hour. And I have to say that Don, probably most people who know him, thinks he walks on water. And he tries sometimes. And one thing about Don, if you don't know, is that he doesn't like to ever not say yes to anybody. So his son-in-law had said that he would come over and help get the trailer, the mower onto the trailer. But Don's daughter didn't want to watch the kids, so he brought them with, and I was going to be watching the kids. Well, they were using a winch, and there was big, heavy machinery involved in getting this mower up onto the trailer. And so the boys could not run around. They wouldn't. One of them's 1 year old and the other is 4, and they weren't really listening to me. And so I had to get them into the school bus and entertain them. And the little one didn't want to be with me at all. And he was screaming. And half an hour turned into 2 hours. And I was angry. And I realized that I wasn't really angry at the little boys. It wasn't their choice to come. And so we ended up having a really good time those 2 hours that we spent in the school bus waiting for the mower to get loaded onto the trailer. But when I got home, I still had some residual upset. And I opened up the email and saw that the opportunity had been extended to sign up to teach this class. And there was second line and third line, but there was conscious love. And I realized that that was something I desperately needed in that moment. And so I've been working with it, and it's been very interesting what the universe has offered to me since I said yes to this. But talking about this neighbor, Dawn, one of the issues that we have in our marriage is that Dawn steps over my boundary lines and takes me out of my comfort zone. And that's been the case most of the time, but it helps me grow. It gives me work. And I have to just say how grateful that I am for that, because to have a work partner in the house is something that a lot of people don't have the opportunity to partake of. And Dawn is a good work partner. And I feel like I've grown a lot because he says yes, and yes, and yes, and yes, and I'm trying to go along and move out of that comfort zone and into the scary zone, and hopefully into the zone of growth. So what I will say about this is that this is the fifth way when you're married to your work partner, and these vows are consenting to the sacred union, and it takes us right up to the eye of the needle. And I believe that's the narrow mifa. And what I've realized is that my judgments are too wide to pass through the eye of the needle, and they must be left behind. And I feel like that's what I've been learning about conscious love. This conscious love is what allows us to shake off the things that are not going to go through the eye of the needle with us. So conscious love for me, first and foremost, is loving my work partner. What's not to love? I want to share with you a poem that Father Carl shared with me, or told me about, on my Lenten retreat. This is a poem by Edwina Gately, and this was what I took into my Lenten retreat this year. And the poem is called "Let Your God Love You." Be silent, be still, alone, empty before your God. Say nothing, ask nothing. Be silent, be still. Let your God look upon you. That is all. God knows. And I love this poem, but I think that this is my comfort zone, being silent, being still, alone. I've been meditating since I was 16, and that silence and solitude, stillness, that's my comfort zone. And it's wonderful. And it's like the email from last week that talked about the fourth line of the work, resting in God. But we can't always stay there. So this is the other front on which my conscious love opportunities arose since March when I accepted this invitation. This is my sister, Betty, who recently passed away, and her husband, Bill, who passed away just a few weeks after Betty did. And Betty's illness has brought me into close communication with her family, and that has taken me out of my comfort zone. My sister lived with 11 dogs and 6 cats, and my brother-in-law is my greatest opportunity in the world for forgiveness. I have been working to forgive my brother-in-law, and it's been very difficult to live with the kind of hostility that I feel for him or felt. I've actually dumped some of it. I know I have more to go. But I think it was something I read from Richard Rohr, and it was about how you really can't continue to expect to be transformed if you're carrying around unforgiveness. And I knew before this that I had unforgiveness. And I do not choose to say what this is about, but I'm sure that he doesn't deserve my hostilities. So I will continue to work with this and to make my aim and my effort around conscious love and forgiveness. So the Ho'oponopono prayer, which I first heard about from Lori Raymond, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I thank you, and I love you. And that is the way that I am working with this and with the Sacred Heart. And I hope that at some point I will be able to get through the eye of the needle without this this unforgiveness in my heart. But when we love our neighbor, it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. And we have to try to figure out what that even means. So I was looking at this with the eye of non-critical self-observation. Our daughter, Franny, one time when I was talking to her and saying, well, I should have done this, I should have done that, she said, oh, don't should all over yourself. And I've remembered that, and I think that helps me to try to make my self-observation more non-critical. And that's tricky because that's the first lens that that seeing comes through, is the critical self-observation, and to shift that really is so crucial. And sometimes it's hard to see that we're actually being critical, because it just, you know, seems obvious that we shouldn't have been the way we were. This was in one of the commentaries on conscious love. By finding the same thing in yourself, you eventually see your neighbor as yourself and yourself as your neighbor. But you must know yourself to begin with. You must begin to be conscious of yourself. This is the most necessary part of conscious love, which is not blind. And so knowing that our neighbor, whoever it is mirroring something in us, and often something that we're not ready to see. That externally considering that can happen when we begin to see more clearly what we're being offered. In talking about love, I thought about David Hawkins' map of consciousness. And love is up here at 500. And in Power versus Force, he talks about super attractive fields. And love is calibrated at 500, and unconditional love at 540. And so I believe that that love, that unconditional love that calibrates at 540, is most likely the conscious love in its fuller manifestation. In Power versus Force, David Hawkins talks about that one individual at level 500 can counterbalance 750,000 individuals who are operating below 200. And looking back at the chart, you can see below 200 are shame, guilt, apathy, grief, fear, desire, anger, and pride. One individual at level 700, which is enlightenment, can counterbalance 70 million individuals below 200. Were it not for these counterbalances, mankind would self-destruct out of the sheer mass of its unopposed negativity. And to me, this is the house on fire. We have the opportunity to be transformed. We have the tools. We have the community. We have the support to do that and to be lifted out of those lower states of consciousness. And the universe is holding its breath for us. When you look at desire at 125, I think that's what substitutes for love on our planet. It's a jealous, possessive, self-serving, controlling, grasping love that comes from our false personality. And I think that at 350, the level of acceptance, we see a more powerful attractor pattern to align with that leads us up into that conscious love level. This is the great pearl, and a quote from one of the commentaries on conscious love. It's something that can be awakened within us. At the women's retreat, we had a journal that was designed by Alana Fairchild, and she has a deck of cards, Mary Oracle deck. And this is from the deck. It says, this field can be felt within and around us, the field, the magnetic field around the heart. As we grow spiritually, the electromagnetic field of the heart grows too, and our energetic influence can become important, not only to immediate family members, but to whole communities with which we are involved. We can continue to grow in that heart power and become influential and sustaining to the world around us. This can even operate to the point that a country we are traveling in at any given time will be impacted by our heart field through which grace can flow. I just looked at my watch and realized that the time is slipping away rather quickly. So I'm going to skip a few things. But as the false self system falls away, we surrender everything that is not true, not kind, that is in some way unforgiving. Back to the pearl of great price. This is the way it looks in godly play when it is laid out, and parables are flat when you tell them in godly play. And the quote from the commentary is, conscious love is stronger than anything in life. And in this story, this man trades everything that's in his little house, his bed, his chair, his lamp, his trunk, his bags of gold, and he trades all of that, and even the frame of his house, he gives that up for the pearl of great price. And for me, it's not about my lamp and my bed, giving those things up. But as I have continued in the path of the work and in centering prayer, a lot of other things have been falling away. My desire to talk, my desire to leave the house, my memories, my roles and commitments, the desire to travel, many friendships, things I was interested in before, things I used to be able to do well. So there's a lot of letting go, and it makes sense because we're really looking to be no thing. But when that actually starts manifesting, it's very uncomfortable. And you just have to keep saying yes and keep sitting down for your center in prayer and keep reading your commentary and allowing all of that to fall away, and to know that as that all falls away, we're really giving God more elbow room to work within us so that those attractor fields of love can grow within us. And giving up some things is how we make space to live a contemplative life. And that's what I've been trying to do this year, is to, in the middle of my busy life, to make time and space to have more quiet and solitude. John, the commentary on conscious love said that John was a follower of bhakti yoga and the school of bhakti yoga. And the object of this way is to get in touch with higher emotional center directly through love. John said that God is love, and the only way in which love can be made perfect is to know and acknowledge the existence of God. So we can't really hope to have anything in terms of conscious love if we're not figuring in God, because this conscious love is the field of God's love. I have something that I want to share a practice at the end, but I want to stop and see if anybody has anything that they wish to share at this time about conscious love. All right, then I'm going to jump back in. Actually, I think I didn't share. So one of the things in the commentary that really stood out to me was this: conscious love changes the signs in us and reverses them so that what was active becomes passive, and what was passive becomes active. And Don this morning suggested that these images kind of symbolize that change that takes place when personality becomes passive and essence becomes active. And I think that the whole thing revolves around our consent. We consent, we choose conscious harmony, we choose consciously chosen love. We initiate a harmonization sequence by consenting. And what we're harmonizing with is the mystery of Christ, which is love. And we activate our optimal template so that we eventually are manifesting Christ as well. But we have to sell everything that we have valued, like the man in the pearl of great price. And the way we sell it is by withdrawing our attention from it. We find the same things in ourselves, and then arrogance, superiority, intolerance fade because they are seen to be ridiculous. One of the things that came my way this year was a book called Good Inside, and it's about working with children. It's a book for parents and teachers. But it asks you, when anything is going on with someone, to look for the most generous interpretation of what was behind their action. And that has helped me a great deal in many, many situations. And that's why I share it with you, because if you can find the most generous interpretation of why someone has done something, it helps to neutralize your reactions, and it helps you to have that conscious love. So that question, who's my neighbor? It's anyone who is thrown in my path. That is my neighbor. Even if I never see them again, our invisible strings get entangled. returning to the idea of parables, the kingdom of heaven is like, this is how we start all of our parables in godly play, and they come in these beautiful gold boxes. The kingdom of heaven is like a field. Jesus taught us how to manifest within the field. He led us to the good green grass and the cool, clear water, the work, centering prayer, manifesting within the field. There's a parable in godly play, the parable of the well. The well is not connected to a bucket. And so the traveler doesn't have any way of getting the bucket down into the well to get the water. But there are these gold strings lying around and he ties them together. And I was working one summer preparing a workshop for the teachers, and I was working with this parable of the deep well. And it came to me that these gold threads are the way we tie the parables together to understand what Jesus was actually trying to teach us. So we can learn something by studying the parable of the sower and mustard seed and the great pearl and the good shepherd and the leaven. And when we tie them together, we get a bit bigger picture. And I have been finding, and I hope that you will take some time this week to think about what you can learn by putting the parables together like a puzzle. What do they tell us about our work and about conscious love? The kingdom of heaven is like, and these are the way these parables start, when someone who scatters seeds goes out and scatters them, a woman who hid the leaven, a man who sowed good seeds in his field, a treasure hidden in a field, finding the great pearl and exchanging everything for it, a person who puts a tiny seed in the ground and it begins to grow, a person who invited many people to a great feast. Well, I would like for our activity to plant something in the field, in the quantum field together. And this is a practice that I was taught by Jean Houston, and it actually is a practice that came from Padmasambhava, who was an 8th century teacher who brought Buddhism to Tibet. And I'm running out of time, so I'm going to have to do a brief version of it. But in this practice, you would write down the word now at the top of your paper, and you would write down the words past, present, and future on a line. And you could make it a vertical line as well. But you begin, and we won't take a whole minute to do this, but you begin by scrolling through in your mind, past, present, future, 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 past, present, future. And you do this for a minute as rapidly as you can. And what you're doing during that time is you're tricking your brain into shifting into the eternal now and fooling your brain in its old belief of sequential time. And as you continue to do that and you shift, then you are going to create something called a terma, and you're going to plant that in the quantum field, in the past and in the future and then in the present. And so to do that, what you're going to do, and we'll go through this, we'll start by putting our hands, and I'm going to actually stop sharing. We're going to put our hands a little bit apart, and I like to start actually by rubbing my hands together and getting them kind of an electromagnetic field between them. And we're going to close our eyes. And while we have our eyes closed, we're going to imagine a ball of energy between our hands. And we're going to feel this ball and work with it and get it to feel stronger and stronger. And it's going to have an intention. And we're going to work with an intention together. And this intention is on behalf of the children at the Church of Conscious Harmony, the children that have attended, the children that attend now, and the children that will attend in the future. One of the things that we say as we go through the threshold into the classroom is, may all who enter have an authentic experience of the living God. And so what we want to do is we want to create this intention that all the children who come to the Church of Conscious Harmony will have an authentic experience of the living God and go forth to bless the world from that place. So we want to feel this energy as a ball of light, and it's being woven with this intention to bless all the children and the youth, the Church of Conscious Harmony. And as this ball, we can feel the edges of it. Perhaps you can feel that it's taking almost a solid feel in your hands. And shortening the experience, we're going to move that ball onto our right hand and feel the weight of it in your right hand now. And we're going to plant this ball, this terma of our intention, in the past. So if you attend or have attended the Church of Conscious Harmony, perhaps you can remember the first time that you were at the church and remember an impression that you had or a place that resonated with you. And you're going to plant that right there. Now, if you've never been on the campus, you can plant this ball anywhere. So take some time just to visualize that that ball is being planted in the past. That intention for the authentic experience of the living God. And now bring your hands back together again. We're going to work to shape this terma and let it grow stronger and perhaps larger. And you can see the patterns of light, the attracting field of this intention. And once you get a strong feeling that you have reformed this terma, you're going to move it on to your right hand. And you might just lift it up and down and see if you can feel the weight of this terma. And you're still holding the terma from the past, and it's also connecting with the terma that you're going to put into the future. So for me, I'm putting this terma and I'm planting it under the table where the Eucharist is served at the church. I'm placing it down there in Theosis Chapel. This intention for the future, this terma. And now I have buried that. And perhaps if you haven't been to the church, you will find another place to put your intention in the future. And now that you've put the past and the future in motion, we're going to reform that terma one more time. That intention that all the children who come to the Church of Conscious Harmony, who've ever come and ever will come, will have an authentic experience of the living God. And we'll take that and bless the world with it. And you can feel that energy again, becoming so real that you can feel the weight of it at the edges of it. And now you're going to take it, you're going to lift it above your head, and you're going to set it down on your head. And you're going to feel as that energy comes into your head. You can feel it around your face and your eyes. Feel it as it comes down and envelops your entire body. Now, in this present moment, take a breath in and a breath out. And I'm going to share one final slide. No, I'm not going to do it that way. Okay, let's go back. Zoom and share it through the share screen. Okay, And this final slide, perhaps you will recognize, if I can get it to come on. This is your Lucky Light Worker Certificate Journey School, because you have used the light of God to bless this evening, to bless the children. And I thank you for your willingness to participate in creating this energy field of consciously chosen love. And that is all I have tonight. So I'm going to turn it back to Mary Ann.
Thank you, Deborah, for the treasure, for the pearls that you led us into. Thank you. Thank you. So now we affirm all that we've been given and pray the prayer of God's love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am simply to remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.